CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The COVID-19 vaccine, the COVID-19 pandemic has not passed us, nor has the vaccine story passed us. There's always the possibility of another update, another booster. I've had four, maybe five, I lose count. However, right now there's legislation in California that speaks to all these matters with a clarity that puzzles me. So I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He's a senior fellow writing at Defining Ideas about the intention of California. This is a law in California, legislation, California AB 2098, about COVID and what you can and can't say to the public. It reads, a section reads, dissemination of misinformation or disinformation related to the SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus is designated unprofessional conduct. It reads also, it shall constitute unprofessional conduct for a physician and surgeon to disseminate misinformation or disinformation. The definition of those words is important. In the legislation, disinformation is defined as, it means misinformation that the licensee deliberately disseminated with malicious intent or an intent to mislead. The word misinformation is interpreted to mean false information that is contradicted by contemporary scientific consensus contrary to the standard of care. That's the language of the law. Mm. I learned from the professor that two courts already have commented on this, one saying it's constitutional language, the other saying it's unconstitutional language. Professor, what I learned from your essay is that the disputes of these last years are not going away. They're not lifting. If anything, they're becoming more difficult to follow. This is California on its own as a world of itself, but other states are likely to be influenced. So is the U.S. Congress. So on these two courts, do they cancel each other out on this law? Good evening to you.
They do not cancel each other out. What's going to happen is there's a contradiction. The second court in a case called Hogue v. Bonta is not bound by the first court in a case called McDonald v. Lawson. It's going to go up on appeal to the circuit court for the Ninth Circuit, and it will have to choose between them. The issue that it raises are so fraught on both the vagueness and the free speech issues that it's quite likely that a case like this will go to the Supreme Court. Because these licensing statutes have always attracted a very high level of scrutiny from the judicial side, because essentially what you're saying is if you disagree with me, we're going to prohibit you from earning a livelihood and prohibit your patients who want to serve with you to be able to do so. So the scrutiny levels are going to be very, very high. The question then is, what does one think about the merits of these two arguments? And in the first case, what they said was, these terms aren't vague. We use them all the time. I believe, actually, they were correct on that. Terms that you use all the time do have very difficult cases. But a word like consensus, which we use all the time when there's a consensus, and we use it by consensus, as it were, we know pretty much what it means is a general agreement about something. And those people who don't share the agreement are not prepared to go to the wall in order to bring it down. And so we move by consensus, which is more than a majority, but less than unanimity. And we understand that. The point about the COVID situation is we do not have that kind of consensus. If you went back 2 years ago and started the deal about the vaccine, there was a huge rush, almost a land rush, like in California for the gold miners, to get that vaccine. People scourged all over the city to find someplace that would give it to them because they thought the net positives were really very great, that the COVID was serious and the medicine was good. It turns out now the situation has basically reversed. We know pretty much that the Omicron is much less serious than the previous viruses, and it's less serious in all of its variations. And on the other hand, the information that's coming out about the vaccines go to both its safety and its effectiveness. On the safety, there are many, many charges that is associated with large numbers of diseases, including myocarditis, complications with respect to pregnancy for women. The list probably consumes 30 diseases, half of which none of us have ever heard of. On the other hand, with the effectiveness, we now know for a certainty that people who get jabbed 2, 3, and even 4 times are still subject to getting the virus. It also doesn't seem to do anything to prevent the transmission of the virus from one person to another. So it stands to reason, if the safety is being called into question and the effectiveness is being doubted, there's going to be less of a willingness to take this up. And to write a statute like this which sort of indicates that whatever the CDC says and whatever the FDA believes is going to set the standard of care is just fantasy. I mean, I've spent a lot of time working with warnings, both that doctors give in informed consent cases and that drug companies give. And the warnings that are given by the CDC can only be described as derelict. They don't warn about anything. All they do is they say, "Is this vaccine is safe for anybody to take over the age of 6 months." There are no caveats. There's no discussion of possible side effects. There's no review of the contrary literature. And what I think they're doing is they're leading with their chin. And one of the reasons I think they're so irresponsible is they believe that they're not subject to any kind of liability given the protection that they and the manufacturers of the vaccines seem to be getting by statute, a matter that is surely going to be challenged down the road. So I think the simplest way to put it on this stuff is if you apply this standard, there's no way you can convict any doctor who disagrees with the CDC. And it may become a point that anybody does agree with the CDC. There will be a time at which it may say, well, the consensus of medical care is that those guys are wrong. And so all of a sudden you're fighting the other side. I don't want to see this thing fought out in court. I think it's perfectly appropriate for doctors to do one thing or another. And that the key issue is one of viewpoint. And if there's a disagreement on that, we do not allow people on one side of the debate to threaten other people with the loss of their livelihood if they disagree with it.
Professor, the First Amendment, it's a puzzle to me as an amateur. And I'll use another example. I'll get away from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. In 1910, when Halley's Comet was due to return every 76 years,
yeah,
there was, in general, in Europe and the United States, a concern about the tail of the comet. I know it's going to sound a little absurd, but this is early days understanding comets in our solar system, that the tail would be poisonous and that the tail was going to pass through the Earth, and so therefore it was important to protect yourself. This is an early version of a bomb shelter. And
yeah,
so
okay.
there were people selling protection or a room that you would be you could live in as the comet passed Earth. And there was no particular demand for everybody to be sheltered together. But there was a debate, scientific debate, about whether this was accurate or not. I use this example because pandemics will come again. Scientific catastrophes will come again. And using the language of the law, or in the case of my memory of the pandemic, defaming people because they dissented from the so-called consensus, That seems to me now to have been way overboard and to have violated or at least to ignore the First Amendment. Now, that's an amateur's interpretation of this, but we will have again science used in order to press people into line, not to allow people to observe from their own points of view.
Yes, look, I mean, there are many complications about the First Amendment, but I agree with you. This is not a difficult case. Licensing statutes are always examined under a presumption of error. What somebody says is the CDC is the gold standard. There are hundreds of people now who disagree with that. There are many people who disagree with every single one of the premises. One of the common numbers that you see is that the COVID situation has killed 1 million people. That number is not documented in any rigorous way. People with COVID who die from other causes are included. Joint causation cases are ignored. The lives that were ironically saved because people weren't exposed to the flu, given that the virus, essentially the coronavirus, essentially occupied all the states. It's just an endless confusion. There is a huge debate over the number of deaths that were caused by the vaccine itself. The VAERS list, the Vaccine Adverse Event Registry and so forth, has hundreds of thousands of people on it. And there are all sorts of complaints that people ignore this. There's the strong evidence in the military that there's been a rapid increase amongst people in the prime of their lives of getting adverse events from taking the vaccine. None of this is really seriously addressed. And in fact, I mean, if you start listening to some of the doctors, they will say that the vaccine is responsible for as many deaths in many ways as COVID. That may be an overstatement, but it's certainly not an irrelevance. The other thing is, I'm just going to say something because it relates to the misconceptions that were in the President's State of the Union address. He treats all of this stuff as being a consequence of COVID. That's incorrect. between the COVID and many of these situations and the deaths, there were a whole series of government regulations, for example, regulations that shut down doctors, including doctors who treated COVID as part of the emergency situation. There were all sorts of closed down of schools and other type of situations. These things themselves had very, very adverse consequences. And there's also a huge debate since the time of the great Barrington declaration at the very latest in the fall of 2020, that the responses that were given were worse than the particular disease. You're not supposed to be able to say this, that this particular statute's the correct thing. In effect, it's saying you have to endorse every public policy that was made. Doctors, like everybody else, should have an ability to criticize what it is that governments do. And so I think the First Amendment applies. And I was kind of sad that the second of these cases, the case that I mentioned, the Hogue case, decided not to deal with the First Amendment issues because the vagueness arguments that, to my mind, have always been highly dubious. The way I put it in the paper is, want to find a really vague term. Do you know, Mr. Batchelor, what the word due process means?
Due process means you get to refute.
Well, it doesn't mean only that. Sometimes it means you have that, a neutral judge. The standards of whether you get cross-examination, whether you do it in writing or oral, all these things are there. And it's a kind of a vague notion. And yet we've lived with it now for 200 years, and there's no way you can declare a term in the Constitution as being unvoid for being unconstitutional. And we flesh it out one way or another. And why do we use a term like that? Because nobody thinks that the same procedures are going to be necessary for a case of petty theft as they are for a case of murder or grand larceny. Nobody's going to think that military tribunals have to operate on the same conditions in war zones as the ordinary civilian trials and so forth. So the do means figure out what's the appropriate thing for each of these contexts. Well, you know, that's kind of a hard thing to do, but we do it. And if that term is not unacceptably vague, why should we say terms like consensus are unacceptably vague? And the vagueness argument points to the obvious fact that no matter what term you use in the English language, if you scratch it, there's always going to be some marginal cases. But that cannot defeat the general application of the statute. And the correct response is to say the word consensus is a perfectly clear meaning. And by the time we're now in February of 2023, it is very clear that there is no consensus whatsoever about the desirability of the vaccine, its effectiveness on the one hand and its safety on the other. And that ought to be the end of the matter. And when somebody passes a statute like this, what they're telling us is there really is a consensus. And these guys are a year out of date in everything that they're thinking at the very best. And what it does is reflects a remarkable degree of arrogance on the one hand and ignorance on the other hand for the California legislators to start posturing about this type of situation. The numbers of physicians who are very eminent, who are against what's going on in this case, is getting large and getting larger. This whole thing is just a very, very bad exercise in political meddling in what should have been a scientific dispute.
One more detail, Richard, because I read Science and Nature magazine all the time, and they have thoughts about COVID, but there is my general understanding of science. Science, when practiced correctly, has no certainty, is built to not have certainty. You all go again and again to look at your results, and somebody else challenges them. Therefore, scientific consensus is a paradox.
Well, I mean, yes and no. There's two things. There is a body of settled law out there that nobody wants to disagree with. But those things are never going to be subject to any disputation because everybody agrees with it. So you're not going to get any tension about that. I mean, and so there's nobody, for example, who say that the appropriate treatment for diabetes is to feed people heavy doses of sugar, particularly when they're comatose. The difficulty is when you get to the hard cases, that's where you do not find agreement. As the evidence gets clearer, some things become settled and other things become contested again. What's happened with respect to this virus is really kind of simple. There was a consensus, wrong, by the way, some 2 years ago. People said, well, the virus is not going to evolve very much, and so it's pretty easy to treat it and to get a vaccine for it. Well, that turned out to be completely false, and I was one of the people who was against the consensus at that time and said that evolutionary theory tells you can't do this.
1 minute, Professor. 1 minute. Go ahead.
Okay. And so essentially what happened in these circumstances is that consensus has been completely turned around. And we now understand that dealing with the virus is much more difficult than it was because it moves very rapidly. And the vaccines are always appropriate for the previous virus. And there is some belief that it turns out these viruses, since they reproduce at a very rapid rate, they find a way to either circumvent the vaccines on the one hand or to change the behavior of the body on the other. There's some serious concern now with something known as immune exhaustion, which says that what happens is, given the fact that we've had so many charges into the system, the body starts to misbehave and it produces the wrong antibodies for the wrong type of antigens. And this has been documented in some scientific literature. So what's happening is the reason we don't have any consensus on this stuff is that this is a moving train at a very rapid rate, and it's not going to slow down. And so the last thing we want to do is to have a group of legislators in California telling, always believe the CDC, when the appropriate response is if a government agency says it, it should be taken under a presumption of error.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing at Defining Ideas. We've been speaking of the pandemic and scientific consensus. The pandemic also is an economic observation, as we are still recovering, and much of that informs the State of the Union. So when we come back, the professor's thoughts about the State of the Union most recent. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.